Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the studios of KSFR, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. I'd like now to introduce Desiree Mays. She's the author of Opera Unveiled, the book now in its 12th year that comes out every year to accompany the five operas of the Santa Fe opera season. Desiree lectures nightly at the Preview Buffet of the Santa Fe Opera. She's an international lecturer and spends much of the winter season lecturing at the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And she's tour director of Act One Tours, which takes people all over the world to see opera. The Santa Fe Opera season this year opens on Friday, July 2nd. Welcome, Desiree, to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
We're talking today about the opera Albert Herring by Benjamin Britten. And this is an opera, a 20th century opera, mid-20th century opera.
It is, and it's sort of a surprise. It's a piece that people don't know typically, Mary Charlotte. Or not, it's not known well in this country. It's quite well known in England. It's about an English country May Day festival, and they can identify very easily with that. And we also here in this country, I think, expect our Benjamin Britten to be pretty serious along the lines of Peter Grimes and Billy Budd, both of which have been done here in Santa Fe with phenomenal success, with a really wonderful director called Paul Curran, who will be directing this piece as well. Albert Herring is, as I said, it's sort of Benjamin Britten light. It's a comedy. It's a lighthearted piece, but it has an absolutely wonderful musical score to it. It tells a very simple tale, which is totally accessible. We'll play a little music from that. It was written in 1947. This, remember, was just after the war years. Benjamin Britten had already created Peter Grimes had been already written and had been a great success. That was probably the opera that really launched him. And then he tried to form his own opera company with his partner, Peter Pears. This was one of the great love stories of opera, I suppose, Benjamin Britten and Peter Pears, the tenor, and the role of Albert Herring was written for him. And it was really a trio of three people who put it together. Eric Crozier was the librettist, and Benjamin Britten, the composer, and Peter Pears, who was the first Albert Herring. It's a demanding role, but it's a fun role. It's a light role. It's a complete contrast to Peter Grimes and Billy Budd.
I was watching a DVD of the opera Albert Herring, and I know that the music is very important. We'll talk about that. But as I was watching it, I thought, you know, this could be a musical. This could be a musical comedy, and the lightness and the sort of crazy, exaggerated, stuffy morals and that
exactly.
kind of thing.
And it's something one can identify with very easily. It was originally taken from a French story set in Normandy by Guy de Maupassant, and Eric Crozier set it then in England, in this country village on the East Coast, which is not too far from where they lived. And it's called Loxford, and Loxford is filled with very predictable characters. There's a Lady Bountiful. She's Lady Billows, who is larger than life and very British, sort of a Rule Britannia type lady, as you'll hear in some of her music. And we are so fortunate this summer having Christine Brewer is going to sing this lead role of Lady Billows. She's a wonderful performer. She'll be perfect in this role. She's got a great sense of humor. She sang Alceste last year, which was a Greek tragedy, so right. This is a contrast for her too. And then there's the vicar and the policeman and the various officials of the village, along with the villagers, who are greengrocers and simple country people, and three naughty kids. They're very simple. The whole piece has got 12 performers, no chorus, and only 12 musicians. So it's what one would call a chamber opera. It's small in scale, but it's an opera I think we can all identify with all of these characters at one moment or another in the course of the piece.
Now, the village is preparing for its May Day celebration, which is a celebration of the coming of the spring and the summer and the flowers and all that.
That goes all the way back to Celtic tradition.
Right.
It's a pagan, not a Christian tradition, which is already an irony since Lady Billows is all about good Christian behavior.
And this committee of good Christians, most of whom are very upright and sort of stuffy and kind of annoying, are trying to find a May Queen among the sweet little girl virgins of the village. And they're all such naughty girls that they can't find a May Queen.
They can't find a May Queen. So this first selection I'd like to play from the opera is when the superintendent, the constable, says, has anyone ever heard of having a May King? And Lady Billows totally explodes, says that's absolutely not possible. And then they talk about his attributes. He's a simple boy. He stays home with his mother. He works in the greengrocer's store. He's very virtuous, a little simple, but what can you do? So that's the sort of the tone of what's happening. Benjamin Britten said of this piece, he said he composed it. This is a direct quote. It's horizontal in texture. Now, that means, for instance, and this is a good example, he takes each one of these characters, the vicar, the schoolmistress, the constable, and they each have their own little theme and piece of music, and as each one presents their arguments, they become meshed and melded into a wonderful quartet, and that whole group comes to the climax in the very end of the story, in the lament at the end. But at this point, we're introduced to them, and you'll hear them discuss the attributes of Albert Herring.
Begging your pardon, I'd like to say, has anyone heard of a King of the May?
King of the May?
Fantastic!
Oh, I never did!
Not in East Suffolk.
I suppose you can't see it.
Maybe it seems a rum sort of notion, but it might help us out of the present commotion.
Rum, it may be helpful now.
Just so, Herring's the name and Herring's the lad, fellow where wanting's there to be had, Albert Herring!
Albert Herring!
Works for his mother, as a greengrocer's shop, strong as a horse, works till he drops. Bit simple, of course, but we won't find another. Albert Herring's clean as newborn hay, honest, truthful, keen as corn and mustard, as they say. Never kicks a brass as most boys do, Albert's real good stuff, that's good as gold, right through and through.
Boy, you mean, but is he quite?
I've seen him since he was a kid. He's always lived next door to me.
When he attended school, poor Albert was not bright at lessons, though quite exceptional for conduct.
An inoffensive lad, simple of course.
A splendid son to Mrs. Herring.
What precisely has a grocer's lad to do with this discussion? Ridiculous proposal. I'm certain there are girls, farmers' daughters, maybe, suitable for us, Clarence! Around all the farms and small holdings, shocking results. Country virgins, if there be such, think too little and see.
So this is the discussion of the possibility of a May King and Albert Herring being the candidate for this. We're talking about the opera Albert Herring by Benjamin Britten.
It's interesting to notice that there's only a piano accompaniment here. So this sort of dialogue that's partly sung and partly spoken is over a piano accompaniment. It's not direct recitative as we know it from the earlier operas, but it is conversational and it does lay the groundwork for these various characters. So the committee meeting ends and we are taken then to the high street where all the little shops are and to the greengrocer's shop of Albert Herring and his mother, Mrs. Herring. And then there's a very human little moment here. The first people we meet in this little group are three kids who are playing ball in the street. And this is something we can all identify with. If you cast your minds back when you played ball as a very young child, you bounce the ball off the wall to rhythms, little sing-song rhythms. And this one is called Bounce Me High, Bounce Me Low.
One of the things that I think is interesting about Albert Herring is not only is it sung in English, and of course at the Santa Fe Opera, there are those nice titles on the seat in front of you so that if you don't quite understand what they're saying, even if it's in English, you can look at the titles. Mm-hmm. But a lot of it you really can understand, and they use all these different accents by which the British kind of differentiate
exactly
themselves from each other.
But they're not so far out that it's not accessible to an American audience. That was right. A problem with Billy Elliot. You know, Billy Elliot was a kid from a dancing boy from Leeds with a very strong Northern English accent. They had to make him an American when they did it on Broadway. So we won't do that here. But this opera, of course, is in English and they enunciate really beautifully. You're not going to have a hard time following the dialogue here. So we meet Albert in the shop and he's taking care of things. And Sid and Nancy come. Sid is the butcher's boy and Nancy's his girlfriend and they're billing and cooing and they're chatting in the shop and then suddenly Florence Pike appears. She is the lady's maid of Lady Billows and she has come to announce that he has been chosen as the May King. And this is a very British piece with Lady Billows at the fore. They literally sail into the shop and they announce that he is to be the May King. Now he's a little bit taken aback by this. He doesn't want anything to do with it. But as soon as his mother hears that there's 25 guineas money involved, she's all
gold
for it.
Coins.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is a wonderful piece called We Bring Great News to You.
We bring great news to you.
£25 all of his own, £25 all of his own, and the
You see what I mean about the Rule Britannia approach?
Right, exactly. So yeah, they come, we're talking about Albert Herring, they come into the shop where Albert Herring and his mother are more than a little bit taken aback.
Yes.
But they've basically, they've made him an offer they can't refuse.
Yes, but it's difficult. And the audience's sympathy is torn now because he's going to be dressed up in a white suit with orange blossoms in his hair.
Which he doesn't really want.
No, no.
We kind of want to see it.
Yeah,
because we know he will be cute.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another whole underlying story in that area too, of course. The next scene then, the next act is at the village green where they have a table set up for the dignitaries. And a lovely human moment with the schoolmistress where she's practicing the kids, the choir. Albert for King, Albert the Great. They have this little song to sing. And they absolutely mess it up the first time, and it's all out of tune and quite disastrous, as these naughty kids are much more interested in getting to the food of the feast than singing the little chorus. So let's hear a little of that. The schoolmistress in this is always depicted by a flute. She's a sort of a fluty type of lady. She's very sweet. She's very motherly. She's
right.
Got a very high soprano voice. And the kids are just naughty. They're typical human kids. This is the great strength of Britain in this piece. Every single character is only 12, but down to the youngest child, they're perfectly delineated in their characters in the music. It's a little hard with this particular opera. You get so carried away with the story and the comedy, which is fun. It takes another listening, perhaps, to really listen closely to the music, which is, the score is quite lovely, and the way he delineates the characters is great. But here we have Miss Wordsworth, who is the schoolmistress, at choir practice with the kids.
No fidgeting.
So Albert Herring is there, and he's honored by the village.
Well, he hasn't quite come in yet, and there's a fun little instance that happens here. Sid and Nancy come in, and Sid plans to lace his drink with rum.
That's right. So they're trying to get the virginal sweet May King to plastered.
Yeah, exactly. So they pour the rum in. Nancy's a little upset. She's very good-hearted. She's a sweet character in the piece. And she says, I don't think we should do this, but he does it anyway. And there's a wonderful in-joke here for musicians. The piece of music that Benjamin Britten uses as Sid pours the rum into the lemonade is from the Tristan and Isolde opera of Wagner, where Isolde pours the magic potion into Tristan's drink. If you listen closely, you know that opera. You hear.
For opera aficionados,
exactly.
It's
a little in-joke. So everybody arrives. Albert's there in his orange blossom crown and his white suit, and they all make speeches to Lady Billows, who's the Lady Bountiful, and then he has to get up and make a little speech, and he's more mortified. He can't do this. So he gets up and he says, thank you very much, and sits down, has a big swig of lemonade. And the lemonade's beginning to get through to him, and he suddenly starts hiccuping. And there's a wonderful scene here where he's hiccuping, and everybody, you know how it is if someone hiccups, 50 people have a remedy.
They have a remedy.
That's in the opera. Each one comes up and says, this is what you need to do, this is what you need to do. So this is the end of the scene. As they manage to get him over the hiccups, everybody tucks into the feast. But let's hear that scene where he ends up hiccuping.
Albert Herring and his hiccups.
And then we are introduced at this point to one of these wonderful interludes for which Benjamin Britten is so well known. They are high points of his earlier operas, particularly of Peter Grimes, musical interludes that take you from one scene to another. And these are pieces that just relax back into your seat and give yourself up to listen. In this case, he goes from the hijinks of the feast and the party to back to the greengrocer's shop. It's late now, and Albert is alone. He's come home. His mother is out for some reason, and he's a little bit upset. Nancy and Sid are flirting outside. They meet outside his shop, and then they take off together. And he wonders what to do.
So meanwhile, I mean, at the celebration where he's honored, you're sitting there in the audience afraid that he's going to make a drunken fool of himself.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
He gets through it.
He gets through it. He
then
does.
He gets home and is...
It's the letdown. You know, you've been through a great... Yeah.
He's let down. He's been honored. He's kind of made a terrible, very brief speech. And now... What's he supposed to do? Go to bed with mommy upstairs?
Exactly.
And he's always
exactly.
been a mama's boy.
Exactly. It's a very human moment, you know, where he's at a crossroads. So he decides when he hears Nancy and Sid outside billing and cooing, he says, I'm going to do something about this. And he sees the 25 guineas on the table and he says, I'm going to spend some of my virgin's ransom, is what he calls it.
That's a great term.
So he heads on out. So we haven't heard anything from Albert yet. Let's hear a little of his words when he sings Heaven Helps Those Who Help Themselves. There's not many recordings of this, and I should say what recording we're using. It's Stuart Bedford conducting the Northern Symphonia Orchestra of England, and on this recording it's Lady Billows is Josephine Barstow, who is a great character, actress, singer, and Albert is Christopher Gillette. On this recording it's a Naxos recording. So let's hear a little of his thoughts. It's a soliloquy, if you like, this piece, as he decides what is he going to do with his life at this point. Albert, heaven helps those who help themselves.
Albert,
we're talking with Desiree Mays about the opera Albert Herring. So, Albert Herring then basically...
Heads out.
He heads out. He's going out on the town all by himself with a pocket full of gold.
Exactly. But just before he heads out, there's a lovely serious moment where we hear a duet between Nancy and Sid, the young lovers in the piece. They remind me a little bit of the young lovers in Falstaff when all the chaos is going on around them. They sing a very direct and beautiful duet. Eric Crozier said that when he was writing the libretto for this piece, that he hoped that Benjamin Britten would give them some very beautiful music, because the rest is near parody. You know, it is comedy, and he's sending up these characters, but in an affectionate way. There's never anything nasty about the way Benjamin Britten describes these characters. So they sing their beautiful duet, and they're feeling a little guilty, but they go off together into the dark night. So let's hear a little of Nancy and Sid's duet.
For a couple of ports.
Sid, we mustn't.
Warm us up quick.
Oh no, people will talk.
Save enough food for chatter in Albert tonight, so us two won't matter.
Poor kid, it does seem wrong to show him off to everyone like a sort of plaster saint. All the village simple.
Oh, he's all right.
once he's sown a few wild oats, he'll live that down.
But how can he sow them tied to his mom?
I've done my share providing the rum. Are you volunteering to cheer him along the agreeable primrose path?
Of course not! Terrible chilly. It'll be terrible cold up there on the common.
You needn't be frightened with me. Come on, darling. Come, follow me quick. Time is racing fast round the clock. Ticking and talking our evening which we hold for and long for all day.
I saw Desiree, we're talking about Albert Herring, I saw a DVD production of Albert Herring in which the stage chemistry between the Nancy and Sid characters was so thick that you could cut it with a knife. And if in a good production of this, those the kind of love and flirtation and sexuality between those two characters is very beautiful.
Yeah, it's an interesting piece. And the rest, that sort of pure light humor, suddenly you get this this very little seductive duet that's very tender, actually. The Nancy in our production here will be sung by Kate Lindsay. Kate Lindsay is also singing Niklaus, the muse, in The Tales of Hoffmann. She's doubling those two roles. And Sid is Joshua Hopkins in this production. So it'll be interesting to see how that will be approached. And as I said, Paul Curran is perhaps the world's leading director of Benjamin Britten's operas, and he will be directing our production this summer.
Very cool.
So now we come to the last act, and it turns out it's the next morning and Albert is missing, and there's total consternation in the village. They drag the pond. Somebody finds that his orange blossom crown has been found under the wheels of a cart, and they all assume the worst.
And because they, of course, they don't think he's out carousing because he's the May King and he's so
good
and
sweet. Exactly, and they think something terrible has happened to him, so they all get together and they sing this amazing lament, which is called a Trenody, where all of those little themes that we first heard in the first excerpt, actually, today, of each of the characters are brought together in an extraordinarily beautiful polyphony of sound that they all mourn what has happened to Albert until the end of this piece, and there's a ting ting at the door, and they open it, and there stands Albert, all dirty and disheveled.
And it's so funny because they're so sad that he's gone, but then they're so angry that he's
exactly,
back.
Exactly, exactly. So we should, as a last excerpt, let's play a little of that Trinity, the lament, in the midst of life is death. Again, this is near parody. You know, it's a send-up of all the operas that sing these great choral traumatic endings when someone has died. Here there's a little of that, but it's also a beautiful piece of music.
And, yeah, exactly. It's a parody in its content, but it's just beautiful in its musical form.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
And so that was the great Trinity. Mournful Trinity from Albert Herring.
Which you don't expect.
Right. And then Albert Herring comes back in and says, well, I didn't spend all the money, but I spent some of it. His mother is absolutely furious and says she'll never forgive him. But then she looks at him, and it's her sweet son, and so you know she's going to forgive him.
Well, it's an interesting moment, again, a very human moment. He shows up, and everyone is in the midst of this dirge of death, and suddenly it's all for nothing. And they all sort of turn on him. Why did you frighten us so? And they really they cast him out. They don't want anything to do with him. And they all sail out of the shop, just as they sailed in earlier on.
Except Sid and Nancy are very happy.
Except Sid and Nancy.
Because they're the ones who got him drunk, and they thought if he's dead, it's their fault.
Yeah, exactly. So at this point, he says, well, I'll tell you what I did. And he stole a bicycle and he went to town. It wasn't too big a night of debauchery. He went to the horse and groom and he drank everything he could get his hands on with his virgin's ransom money. And then he was thrown out of there because he was so obstreperous, and he went to the Dog and Duck. I mean, I love these names. These are really English pubs. And he drank some more there until finally he got kicked out of there, and finally he made his way home. But he's changed. He's had his initiation. This is perhaps what this opera is about at this point.
And he also makes a little song that makes a point about the fact that if your mother and your village keep you under their thumb, then there's going to be an explosion. It's basically a kind of psychological treatise about the hazards of repression.
It is, and it's about the coming of age of a young man. I mean, he's caught by his mother's apron strings, as you put it. That's true, and he's always been a mother's boy, but not anymore. He's now fledged. He's fledged his wings, and he has taken off, and he's had this one night, and he'll go back to being the greengrocer boy, but he'll be different. He turns to his mother and said, "It's really your fault. You kept me down. You hemmed me in. I had no freedom. What could I do but explode?" So he sort of makes it right with each of the characters, and he says, I am my own man now. And at the end, very sweetly, it's Sid and Nancy who are with him, who are saying, now you can get a life of your own, which is great. And the kids who have been sending him up and calling him nasty names are invited in and each given a peach. And in the original productions, it was lovely. He would take the crushed orange blossom crown and throw it out into the audience.
Ah.
That's a lovely touch. I don't know if we'll be doing that here. So the story ends happily. It's a coming of age, perhaps. And this, of course, fits in perfectly with the themes of Benjamin Britten. Peter Grimes and Billy Budd are about the isolated, alienated human being who is cast out by their society, who are always on the fringes of the society. They can never be part of it. And they both die as a result. I mean, Billy Budd is the ultimate innocent, and he ends up being hanged through really no fault of his own. But in this case, it's a similar awakening and a coming to the realization that he needs to be his own person. But there's no tragedy at the end of this opera. It's a happy, sweet ending, and you go home feeling good.
Right, and you know that pretty soon after the opera is over, the character, if he really existed, would find a girlfriend and,
yes, and
you know, go on and be happy.
Do what everybody else does.
Probably among one of the naughty girls who was not allowed to be the May Queen in the first place.
Maybe. There's a sweet story that when they were looking for names for these characters, Benjamin Britten knew a kid in the village called Sissy Woodger, which is a very East Anglia name, and he gave her a ticket to a concert. And she took the ticket, and he saw her the next day, and he said to her, what did you think of it? And she said, I didn't mind it at all. It was a sweet comment. So this is Sissy, one of the girls in the piece. Now, this piece stands or falls, I think, by the artists who are performing it. It really takes performers who are great actor-actresses as well. And as I said, we do have Paul Curran directing. We also have Sir Andrew Davis, a knight of the British realm, who is a wonderful conductor. He's now the resident conductor with Lyric Opera Chicago. And a real coup, I think, for the Santa Fe Opera to have Sir Andrew here to conduct this opera for us. He knew, I think he actually worked with Britten, though I'm not 100% sure, but he knows exactly what this piece should be about musically. And as I mentioned, Lady Billows will be Christine Brewer. Now, all of the other characters in this piece are the leading character actor singers in the business today. I mean, they really are. They're quite stunning. So I think from that point of view, it'll be quite great. People may be familiar with Alex Schrader, who sings our star Albert Herring, because he won the Metropolitan auditions a couple of years back, and he was also one of the characters that was in the documentary film The Audition. The Met put this out last year to show how these young singers reach this to the verge of stardom. It really does put them on the map. And we had contracted him first, which is great. But Alex Schrader will be our Albert Herring here, a man apparently who has a great sense of humor. Between the time he won the Met auditions and coming here, he's been to San Francisco, Bordeaux, the Bavarian Opera, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and St. Louis. I mean, these young singers are real globetrotters. As they work, so he'll be great.
And what's nice about this opera, it has, you can really cast people in age-appropriate roles from the youngest to the very oldest.
Yes, you can. Remembering the 12, and they're all in each their own individual character portrayed so beautifully in the music, and it's a fun piece. So I hope people, even though you don't know this opera, Albert Herring, what's that? Give it a try. It's fun.
And I have to say, I rented through Netflix the opera of it. So if you want to actually prepare, you can
yes.
get that. And it's things like that, you know, with opera, I think it's worth preparing in that way. I mean, it's you rent the opera, look at it, get a sense of what the themes are and the story and some of the ways in which somebody has chosen to interpret it. And then when you go to the Santa Fe Opera, of course, it'll be the same and it'll be different, and you'll have so much more to bring to it.
I think you need to know the storyline. And even if you've heard the music once, that music is in you somewhere, so that when you're hearing it in live performance, it comes back. By knowing the story, it takes the sort of the intellectual aspect out of it, and you are open to the music. And the music tells the story perfectly well. We just have to let go and let it do that. And this is a good example of this happening. So, yeah, I always encourage people to see a DVD or listen to a CD and sit down with the libretto, which is usually in the original language and English, and you can follow it through. Then you really get it. So when you see it in the theater, it really enriches the experience, I think.
So we have these great singers and director as well.
We do. So hopefully I'll see everyone up at Albert Herring.
Next week, we're going to be talking about Madame Butterfly. Desiree, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Desiree Mays is the author of Opera Unveiled and the nightly lecturer at the opera's Preview Buffet. The Santa Fe Opera season opens this year on Friday, July 2nd. You can find them on the web at santafeopera.org, and their number is 505-986-5900. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Many thanks to Marilyn LeBlanc for engineering. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.